Right, the time is 2 minutes in the off 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Thank you so much for joining us again on our today's segment. And this is Early Morning Scoop. This is a show where we give you the news on the looking at the entrepreneurship. We're speaking about discussion on the economic affairs and trade policy. That what we give you until the hour of 7:30 is the 27th of the of June 2025. And this is what we will give you today. Stay tuned. But before we get into the international segment, please do not forget to catch up or connect with us or follow us on our social media platforms. Eagle FM Namibia, find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. And of course, we have the newspaper page, that is the Villager newspaper page on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. And also, we have a WhatsApp channel that is Eagle Media House. You find us on WhatsApp channel so that at least you can also catch up, looking at our news, our daily news update, and of course the newspaper alert. And of course, do not forget to download the very most important, app. That is Eagle FM app that you find on your Google Play Store and of course the App Store. To start off internationally is that the agriculture industry that is in South Africa, according to Statistics of South Africa's latest agriculture survey, positive gains in horticulture as well as the mixed and animal farming led to 6.8% rise in total income at 491.7 billion Namibian dollars, rand in 2023. And we might take a listen to this particular update.
Is growing both in value and size according to Statistics South Africa's latest agricultural survey. Climate through the changes and to talk us through that, I am with the founder of Amandle Farm, that is Nkosana Mthimkhulu. Thank you so much for talking to us. We do see the sunflowers behind us, and with my limited education, I thought they were burned out, but we are clearly harvesting here. Talk us through the business or the farming that you do here, and why sunflower is such a big part of that.
Well, I am a crop farmer within Northwest Province. So sunflower, a resilient crop, good for dry land conditions. We've had very unstable weather conditions. So I opted to plant sunflower, thinking that we were going to have a dry season similar to last year. But this year we had rain like never before. So we had more rains than expected, which is falls under El Nino. So one needs to be in the loop of things. So I'm within organized agriculture, so I have access to information. I always know what the weather predictions are ahead of time. I always look into technology in case of drought or in case of excessive rain. So agri-technology is the way that I get in the loop of things to prevent anything that may happen on the farm. Sometimes you lose all, like last year was a terrible year. Sometimes you just lose a bit, like we did with this excessive rain.
Where are the opportunities that black farmers can really dig into for growth?
Well, I'm optimistic about growth for emerging black farmers in South Africa. Our agriculture is organized. And if you look at partnerships between farmers, food producers, and government, we're able to make a success out of things. So when you talk about growth, whether it's in maize, whether it's in dry beans, whether it's in sunflower, the opportunities are there. We just need to look into the challenges that emerging black farmers are facing.
Mm. And what are some of those challenges, Nkosana, before I let you go, that are sort of unique or specific to black farmers, but also to the industry, and just working through those then so that next year we have a different picture?
I think besides climate change, one thing that's critical for black farmers is title deeds. We need our title deeds, especially those who are leasing land from government. Long-term leases are better than what it was before, but I think title deeds will strengthen the prospects of emerging commercial producers, as well as access to, you know, finance, whether it be production inputs. Mm-hmm. But it must come on time, because nature doesn't wait for bankers. Timely finance is critical to the success of black farmers.
All right, it's 7 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now, to move on to the next item in Zambia, is that the annual rate of inflation for the month of June 2025 has slowed down to 14.1% from 15.3% recorded in May 2025. Now, this was attributed by the drop to price movement in both food and non-food items. We might take a listen.
2.8% in the first quarter of 2025 has begun to ease, now sitting at 14.1%. The Zambia Statistics Agency, ZAMSTAT, says the rate is down from last month's figure, which stood at 15.3%. Acting Statistician General Sheila Mdenda has attributed the drop in annual rate of inflation in price movements in both food and non-food items.
Zambia's gross domestic product grew to 153,882 million kwacha in quarter 1 2025, up from 149,110 million kwacha in quarter 1 2024.
Other factors that have pushed inflation downwards is good performance in industries such as forestry, fishing, agriculture, mining, and quarrying.
We have a total trade surplus of 1.5 billion kwacha posted for May 2025. And here we see that exports increased by 13.1% on account of intermediate goods increasing at 12.1%, consumer goods increasing at 18.8%, capital goods 100.7%, and raw materials are 9.9%.
And Finance Minister Stumbeko Musokotwani says the continued drop of inflation is a good signal that the country is on the right economic path. Dr. Musokotwani says the country has also seen a 4.5 GDP growth, but will be expected to rise with the country having recorded a bumper harvest, among other initiatives.
Of course, we expect more in the second quarter, because sure this 4.5 did not include agriculture, so people were not yet harvesting. So, and of course, the first quarter, because of the rain and so forth, mining.
And economist Trevor Hambayi praised government for sustaining its economic growth, which has supported a drop in the annual rate of inflation and the appreciation of the kwacha.
Reduction in inflation that we have seen in the 30-day period that we are actually measuring the inflation in comparison to last year. And this is a good trend. It means there are certain metrics in the economy that are actually positive, but also you're speaking to the issue around the growth in the GDP.
Another economy.
All right, the time is 10 minutes in the hour of 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now, to move on to Zimbabwe, it's that Zimbabwe is set to harvest 2.7 million tons of maize this year, a significant increase compared to last year's poor harvest, which was now attributed to drought conditions. Now, experts credit this improvement to favorable rainfall and support programs from both the government and the private sector. Now, as a result of this positive outlook, Zimbabwe has been now removed from the United Nations list of hunger hotspots. We might take a lesson.
Binga is drying out the last of his maize crop before delivering it to the state-run grain marketing board. His output is a huge contrast to the meager harvest he realized last year, when an El Nino-induced drought wiped out most of his crop. Zimbabwe has bounced back from a series of disastrous seasons emphatically. Authorities project a 2.7 million ton maize harvest, well above the annual demand of 2.2 million. This comes at a time when farmers are now turning their attention to the other grains in which Zimbabwe has made significant strides in growing. Wheat.
I am expecting at least 8 tons per hectare. It's going to be a good harvest because I got all the inputs, including seed and fertilizer, on time. We are not experiencing power outages, so the irrigation is going on well.
The government has made a deliberate effort to ramp up wheat production as it sees the cereal becoming a strategic crop for both food security and foreign currency generation through exports. Self-sufficiency targets have been exceeded in recent years, on the back of increased financing by private contractors who now contribute the bulk of funding for the crop. 120,000 hectares of land are planned to be put under the crop this season.
This is in order to ensure that first and foremost, local industry is supplied with its requirement of local wheat, which is circa 270,000 tons on an annual basis, and that there is enough wheat that is put back into the strategic grain reserve in order to sort of basically ensure that the country has a food locker for bad years. Because the minister's plan is that our food security is going to be wheat-based.
This year, Zimbabwe is aiming to produce 600,000 tons of wheat, its highest ever harvest.
All right, there you have it. The time is 12 minutes in the office o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Then we're moving to Kenya. Is that the agricultural experts from China and Africa gathered in Nairobi, Kenya, to explore ways to boost food security and economic growth to the continent through a modern technology.
Agricultural potential is vast, but remains largely untapped. Countries on the continent face many challenges in exploiting this potential, from coping with climate change-related risks to struggling to deal with pests and low crop yields. But delegates, including Chinese agricultural experts and African policymakers, who met in the Kenyan capital on Tuesday, say cutting-edge tech solutions could help resolve some of Africa's biggest agricultural problems. The first China-Africa Agritech meeting in Nairobi is tied to the Forum on China-Africa Cooperation.
Agricultural modernization is one of the four pillars of the 2024 FOCAC, and we have to take opportunities once again for collaboration in the context of South-South cooperation. We have seen exactly where the opportunities lies and what China can offer to modernize our agricultural sector in the continent.
Let's use this forum as an opportunity. Gather all our wisdom, gather all the technology power to let Pingu and China's technology go to the land of Africa. Let Africa's original product enter China market. I hope China-Africa's cooperation will be based on the One Belt, One Road background and sharing our community with this framework.
For years, sectors like farming and agribusiness have blamed each other for the slow adoption of tech. Now they agree the industry needs bold, innovative solutions. But getting the funding needed for this has proven to be a huge challenge.
But even the most powerful engine needs fuel. It needs direction.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace. It needs maintenance.
Agriculture plays a pivotal role in Africa's economic agenda, contributing significantly to employment, food security, and economic growth. Improving productivity in agriculture, dominated by smallholder farmers in most African economies, has remained one area of concern. But experts say advancements from precision irrigation systems to drone technology for crop monitoring are key in not just securing food security in Africa, but also boosting productivity.
The sharing of knowledge is critical to the development of inclusive agricultural transformation in Africa, and to make sure that the inclusive agricultural transformation in Africa benefits our smallholder farmers most, but also it supports them with the tools and knowledge and policies that are required for us to make a great progress.
Right, there you have it. Now to the UN, it says that the new UN report labeled Nigeria as one of the 5 African hunger hotspots where food insecurity is now predicted to worsen through October. Now this situation has now been attributed to insecurity and weak land rights, both of which hinder food production.
Joint FAO and WFP report offers an early warning on hunger risks across Africa. Nigeria now ranks alongside Sudan, South Sudan, Mali, and Burkina Faso. UN figures show 30.6 million Nigerians face acute food shortages this lean season.
We're in a state of emergency at any rate, and we are doing all we can to make sure that we go back into all year-round farming. Both the federal government and the state governments are working to complement each other by supporting farmers and ensuring that we are building their capacity and we're giving them all the necessary support to produce.
Despite government's past spending, food output remains low, dragged down by low mechanization, outdated methods, and an aging farming population. Climate change is worsening it all. It's estimated that Nigeria loses 350,000 hectares of land annually to desertification. Last year alone, torrential rains and floods destroyed more than 1.5 million hectares of cropland. Experts say agricultural reforms must go beyond spending.
Investment should meet an alignment across the value chain, addressing critical issues, addressing the knowledge gap, addressing capacity building, addressing extension services, you know, addressing mechanization, right? So if these investments are properly aligned, you understand, you know, in a priority, the prioritized way, and the inefficiencies are mitigated, then these investments will start to produce results.
Insecurity and weak land rights are stalling food production. Farmer-herder clashes persist in food hubs like Benue and Plateau states. Many farmers still don't own the land they farm. Input prices and inflation are squeezing harvests, and experts warn the sector is losing the next generation.
We don't have a succession plan around agriculture in Nigeria. The earlier we address this and have a deliberate national program to not just engage, include, and integrate young people into the agri-food system, but to make sure that they are mainstreamed as, you know, critical custodians.
Despite 2 national food emergencies in 2 years, 4.4 million people in the Northeast still face extreme hunger. The UN warns the crisis could turn deadly without swift action. Nigeria's president launched 2,000 tractors and other farm implements just days ago as part of a broader effort to revitalize the agricultural sector and achieve food security. But experts are...
Right, it's 20 minutes in the hour, 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now, to move on to the next item, it says that the United States government has announced a new visa policy requiring all applicants for FMNG, non-immigrant visas, to set their social media account to public. Now, the order, which comes into effect immediately, which apply to Facebook, Instagram, X, TikTok, and other platforms, this is now to allow U.S. authorities to full access to monitor online activity as part of the vetting process. Now, Fishery claims this is aimed at enhancing national security screening. Now, but critics say it now raises serious privacy and freedom of expression concern, particularly for young students and researchers.
So the United States, particularly for young students and researchers. Well, for more on this, we're joined by Reputation First's Managing Director, Tepo Madzeba, who joins us via video link. And in studio, I'm joined by immigration expert Nicholas Ramos in studio with us. Nicholas, a good evening to you.
Good to see you again.
Good to see you. Thanks so much for coming in again. And Tepo will join us in just a moment. But I think just as an immigration expert, talk to me about, I mean, what you think of this, what you make of it. Is this really about national security? And how do you think it's actually playing out at, borders?
Well, this is clearly politically motivated. They're clearly
these American visas, these are student visas for studies, vocations, and culture exchange. So clearly, based on what's been happening in the U.S. around the world, they're probably looking for people who are making anti-statements against Israel. Also, I can tell you that at the Canadian-U.S. border, even at various ports of entry throughout the United States, they're looking at people's Facebooks, and they're telling people they want to see if you've made any negative comments about the government, specifically Donald Trump. This is politically motivated, but as a immigration specialist, a recruitment specialist, sending people around the world, this isn't uncommon. Border guards, whether it's the U.S., Canada, the U.K., they have full, absolute, and sole discretion on whether to admit you in the country. And it's not uncommon of them for them to go through your cell phone to look at emails, Instagram. They're usually looking for sex workers. That's the truth. If they get that sense, that's a big thing for them. But this isn't an uncommon phenomenon, but this is clearly politically motivated.
Yeah, and this is the thing, is that we're living in really, I suppose, tumultuous political times globally, really. I mean, this is, it's one of those times when it's very rare that you'll find someone not posting something political at some point. So just how sustainable is the political intention behind this?
Well, it's very difficult because anyone who travels, and I travel myself, border crossings are busy, they have quotas to reach in terms of how many people, when the flights are coming in, how many people they have to push through. So going through somebody's cell phone and social media, it is going to slow down the line. So you're right. It's not practical. It's not sustainable. It raises a whole bunch of ethical reasons. Usually when they do go through your phone or ask through your phone, whether it's legal or not, they do it. But it's for the security and health of the nation. This is just political, right? Trying to appease a political base or various allies of the U.S., and quite frankly, it's not right.
Okay, let's bring in Tepo. Tepo Matsiba, of course, is a reputation expert. Tepo, good evening to you. Welcome back to the show. Always good to have you back with us.
Good evening. Thank you so much.
Yeah. So what do you make of this? You're traveling to the U.S., Tepo, and when you arrive, you're told at some point in the process to show us your Facebook, your TikTok, and your Instagram. I mean, what do you make of hearing that?
Livingstone, Zambia.
I really thought it was funny in the beginning until I realized that they're going ahead with it. I think as a principle, you have a country that is at crossroads with its core values. Remember, the U.S. Is known for liberties, democracy, a country of possibilities where anyone from around the world can go and make a better version of themselves. To go and screen people at this level is not only embarrassing, I think, for the sane Americans, the sanity of American business, but it's also just says that the U.S. is willing to compromise its values, its own values, at all costs. But also, it's a country that now the narrative being created by this administration comes across like we don't care about anybody and what anybody else says. We don't care about the world. We don't care about the future. We don't care about the reality. All we care about is our policy direction that we are taking to protect a certain or particular narrative. It's really, really sad to watch. It's not practical. But even if it was to be done prior, which I'm sure they're already doing to screen people's accounts, we all screen employees before we recruit them. But for you to say, I want actually your handle and I want to see what you said about my country before you visit, I think the tourism industry in the U.S. must be reeling with pain and disappointment.
Yeah, I'm trying to imagine, Tepo, I mean, if we're having this discussion here, outside of the U.S., what kind of discourse this is causing inside of the U.S. about, whether or not you can and cannot speak out against your own leadership in that country.
No, it's scary because we live in a very instant and digitized world. And a part of that benefit of democracy is that you can speak your mind. Part of access to information and access to tools to communicate means that you can actually, through freedom of speech, within limits, of course, you can express yourself. And there are already guidelines by social media companies, the entities themselves, platforms themselves, about how to deal with people who misbehave on social media. But, and importantly, there are already guidelines by companies about how employees should behave, by governments about how citizens should behave. So issues that have to do with a threat to a country, treason, and things like that, there are already appropriate mechanisms that are being deployed globally by different countries to deal with problems. But where you are, what we're having here is something that comes across like a very invasive situation that undermines transparency. And that brand called Brand USA has always consistently spoken about transparency, liberties, democracy. And the message it's really sending is that we are so arrogant, we are so powerful, that we're not going to even allow anyone to speak, including the citizens. So people would have to deal with issues such as gender parity, issues such as activists.
All right, there you have it. It's 27 minutes in the after 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. Now, to move on to Zambia, is that the government has embarked on expanding revenue in the tourism sector from the traditional sightseeing to other activities such as sport and medical tourism. We might take a listen.
Zambia's tourist capital boasts of being a clean town, blessed with some historic buildings and home to one of the seven natural wonders of the world, the mighty Victoria Falls. Sadly, there is nothing much to boast about when it comes to public sports infrastructure, apart from having a skeleton Maramba Stadium and the almost invisible Villa Ground. The iconic Royal Livingstone Golf Club is also steadily burying its beauty in the grass, affecting the growth of sports tourism in Livingstone District. Luckily, there is a new dawn of hope, expected to trigger sports development and tourism through the construction of a multi-purpose sports facility.
When you have sports events, you attract people from all over the world, people from all over the country to come and come into Livingston. And therefore, you find your hospitality industry is booming, your arts industry is booming, and several other aspects of the Livingston economy begin to boom as a result of that interaction. So you can't separate sports from tourism. And so for us, we're being deliberate, we're being methodical about it, and ensuring that contribute to the GDP of our economy through sports and tourism.
Livingstone City Council wants the facility built as soon as possible.
What we have is a skeleton form of kind of a structure in the Maramba Stadium. But us to have an ultra-modern stadium, a state of an art, is something that the city is lacking. And we hope this can be done within a year from the time that we're going to do the groundbreaking.
The groundbreaking is set for August.
I expect to see the groundbreaking in the month of August. From henceforth, it's all system.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHP on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
Omudiha utekirwaka guna iimadina omjo.
All right, welcome back. Lastly, on the international segment is that the farming industry grows by 6.8 in profit in South Africa. We might take a listen to this update.
Of South Africa's agricultural sector, according to the latest numbers from Stats SA, the industry has raked in 491.7 billion rand over the past 7 years. That represents a 6.8% jump. And it's thanks to everything from horticulture to livestock and a whole lot of hard work in between. But with all this growth, one big question remains. Where are the black farmers in this upward trend? Our business reporter, Ntokozo Khumalo, is out in the field, literally out in the field, in Swartruggens, in the northwest, to be specific, to dig into the story. And Ntokozo, good morning. I hear that cattle farming is facing tough terrain recently with declining sales. Where exactly are farmers planting their seeds for profit these days? It does also seems like a story that needs good boots this morning. But I'm also marveling at the wonderful ostriches you've just shown us.
Yeah, good morning, Iman. I was hoping to also see some of the giraffe and buffalo here, which I will be seeing after speaking to you here. But you're absolutely right, Iman. At 9 o'clock, Statistics South Africa did release that agricultural survey that did show that the industry is growing both in size and value. And as you said, cow production on a decrease in 2023, going from 3.2 million to 2.9 million. But still, animal farming contributing quite a lot to that 491 billion rand that was registered in the industry in 2023. And just to talk us through that exactly of where the black farmers are and how they're diversifying for growth, I am now joined by Andrew Apane, who is the founder of the farm that we are on here and the director. And you are also with the association. Thank you so much for talking to us. And we were trying to bring the ostrich a little closer to us here. But as Iman said, that's animal farming still contributing substantially to growth in the industry. But cow farming, which usually is where black farmers would start off, seeing that decline, expected to still feel the impact, especially on the back of the foot and mouth disease. Talk us through what it is that you do here. And we've already seen the ostrich. So how you've managed to diversify so that you can continue to see some growth.
Thank you, Ntagosa, for the opportunity to look at the stats that was released this morning. The interesting part is the diversification is very, very much important in this sector of agriculture. So if you look at the cows, the downfall of the cows, there are a lot of factors. I mean, some of the factors that affect especially black people is stock theft. As you know that we do our cattle breeding in rural areas where the stock theft is rife. So it's a big problem to us. And that's why there's a decline. I mean, look at the numbers in terms of the stock theft. Black people are really losing a lot of money in that. So we need to think of being smarter. But even though that happens, the government is trying in terms of the land reform where they are issuing lands to black farmers so that they can have some private lands and start.
All right, there you have it. The time is 34 minutes in the after 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. We can take a listen to a very short commercial break, and then once we return, we'll take you through the local news items. No, do not go away. You must stay tuned.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event such as a promotion.
Right, welcome back. The time is 34 minutes in the after 6 o'clock, and this is Early Morning Scoop. And thank you so much for staying with us. And if you just joined us right now, thank you for tuning in. This is Early Morning Scoop. Now, to start here locally, is that at the City of Windhoek Business Forum, that is on Wednesday, the city mayor Ndashi Efela Rolenja announced a campaign aimed at ensuring food security. Now, the mayor's speech focused on community gardens, backyard horticultural activities, and of course, ensuring that the city becomes a leader in Namibian sustainable gardening practices that are now geared toward food production. Now, the project will now kick off in July with collaborating from collaboration from the Ministry of Agriculture and the University of Namibia. And now, during her speech, She announced that their aim is usually to make 200 to 300 backyard gardens in the next period after July. And of course, the main aim is to enhance food security and to improve income generation and of course, elevate malnutrition in the region. Now on that, my colleague David Shombe brought us this particular update. You might take a listen.
Yes, we are looking at business development and also economic development, continuing with Early Morning Scoop program. And yeah, got into the conversation with my colleague, Dwight Links, and he's going to update us, particularly at the launch of Mayora Legacy Project that was happening at the City of Windhoek Business Forum yesterday. And he was one of the journalists who attended, and he's going to engage us on this. Good morning, Dwight, and how are you doing?
I'm all right, and you, David, how are you doing?
Good. I'm doing very well. Now, let us look at what have happened yesterday, particularly at the City of Windhoek Business Forum.
So, David, just ultimately starting off on particularly what this entailed or what this engagement was about.
Yeah.
So, for those of the listeners that followed us on our socials, that's on Eagle FM's and the Village's socials.
Yeah.
The City of Windhoek Mayor, that being Mayor Indeshi Hafela Laranja, announced the Windhoek Grows campaign, which ultimately is a campaign based focused on the aspect of urban agricultural projects or urban agricultural endeavors. And this is one of the particular things that ultimately is very insightful to look at because for what many Namibians know about City of Windhoek's strict rules, if that is the perception, based upon the perception of strict rules, the mayor herself, as well as also the CEO, in their particular speeches at the Windhoek Business Forum, was that yes, it is perceived that Windhoek does have very strict rules, specifically when it comes to certain particular agricultural practices or processes being conducted within the city limits. That's within the urban limits of the city.
Yeah.
But they've recognized that in terms of playing an active part in food sustainability, in food security, as well as also assisting in various kinds of economic developmental endeavors, that one of the easiest mechanisms to try and actually activate is the, you know, horticultural activities or backyard gardening, you know, to be a little bit more frank in the explainer, backyard gardening within the various dimensions of the city itself. Because they mentioned that there was a notion of many Windhoek residents actually have dormant backyard land, if we want to identify it like that, and that these residents are actually being encouraged to try and explore in terms of developing horticultural activities in their backyards.
Now, did the mayor got into detail on how that project is going to be launched, and what are some of the initiative in place, or just an advocacy for backyard gardening?
Well, one of the components in terms of how it would be launched, David, is what is actually a little bit that's the uncertainty about this particular dimension, because the mayor only noted the project is set to kick off in July next month, but there's no clear indicator where in July, what date in July. Another dimension of also associated with this is that the City of Windhoek is doing this in collaboration with the Ministry of Agriculture, as well as also the University of Namibia. And both of these two particular entities have pledged technical support for training, awareness generating campaigns, as well as also with other technical assistance for the City of Windhoek in terms of trying to encourage residents in the city center. Now, there is, however, another particular dimension to this, David, that the mayor identified that they have a goal of between 200 to 300 residents that they wish to train, meaning they wish to encourage 200 to 300 people maximum in terms of taking up backyard gardening or, horticultural activity, because the word horticulture, if you go look at its explainer, you know, in terms of definition, horticulture is a subsector in agriculture. And horticulture specifically pertains to the size of land that you have in at your availability, as well as also where it is based. So if it's in urban limits, then it counts as horticulture. If it is limited, in another scenario, for example, like in a small plot outside of city limits, outside of an urban limit, then it obviously gets a different definition or a different label associated to it. But they all basically translate to the same activity, i.e. that you are growing some sort of a crop, either for subsistence, meaning for your own usage, or you're growing it to try and generate other particular potential activities from it, like, for example, selling it on, reselling it, and ultimately also supplying it into local food food chains of the city of Windhoek itself.
Yeah. While we are there, did they mention anything related to the location? Because, you know, when you look at the structure and the establishment of Windhoek City, those who are living at that is called informal area, is so congested to that extent, it's practically impossible to come up with a backyard garden. Did they mention anything related to the location and how this thing is going to be utilized, or it was not included in the statement?
No, the mayor did not include this particular dimension yet, yeah. David. Reason being that while the announcement was made, she herself announced that the economic development or the economic development department, that's one of the departments in the city of Windhoek,
yeah,
that they have to come up with a comprehensive plan to ultimately try and meet what she announced or what she launched. Mm-hmm. So you see one specific stakeholder within the council announcing a legacy project, as she calls it, because it is being deemed here as a legacy project, meaning that the mayor unveiled, and I'm quoting from City of Windhoek's own particular press statement.
Yeah.
The mayor unveiled her mayoral legacy project that is known as Windhoek Grows Campaign, a citywide initiative aimed at promoting household backyard gardening to boost food security and sustainable living in Windhoek.
Oh, okay.
Now, just on that question that you asked, David.
Yeah.
Quite clearly, the dimensions like you highlighted, which localities of the city would this be targeted at?
Yeah.
Which particular demographics, meaning what kind of a person would participate in this activity?
Yeah.
Would you be an unemployed person? Because in her speech, she highlighted there would be a scenario of employment creation, possible employment creation by people's participating in this activity.
Mm.
We don't know what budget would be allocated to assist those that would like to participate in this project.
Yeah.
We don't know, would this be about, like I highlighted earlier, subsistence activities, meaning to feed yourself and your household?
Yeah.
Or is this about trying to grow, to spur on economic activity, meaning to sell to other businesses or to other people and thus generating income through that? It'll be difficult to prove the employment creation dimension.
Yeah.
There are various factors to it. I mean, at Eagle FM, we interviewed one such well-known horticulturalist.
Yeah.
We've spoken a lot to Mr. Shipingana, Josiah Shipingana, about horticulture and backyard gardening.
Yeah.
He himself has highlighted that it is a game about patience, but it actually pays off in the end if you know what you wish to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends on how this particular project kicks off, when it kicks off. They said July. We don't know when in July.
Mm.
We know that the target is 200 to 300 people. We don't know if it's households or just individuals.
Yes.
We also don't know specifically what kind of inputs would be associated to actually start this project off, because we're talking about land, we're talking about money, we're talking about equipment, and we're talking about the aspect in terms of other dimensions like technical assistance, advice, training, even cars. You know, you have to factor in a car's usage in this discussion as well.
Yeah, you just answered my question, because I wanted to talk about figures, because numbers are very important, particularly when you talk about money. But you clarified that. So, Dwight Link, thank you very much for your time, and also thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Not a problem. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, David.
Yeah. Moving on to the next item, the Namibian Agronomic Board has issued its open and closed borders notice for July 2025. And on this, joining us to provide insights on this notice is Mayor Emily Abraham from the Namibian Agronomic Board. A very good morning to you, Mayor Emily, and welcome to the Early Morning Scoop.
Thank you so much, Lois, and a very good morning to you and the EGLSM listeners.
Thank you so much.
I'm happy to be on this platform this morning.
Thank you so much. May Emily, just to start off, how maybe a significance is this notice to consumers? I know I do ask you the very same question every month, but of course for our new producers and of course those also looking to venture into farming, could you just explain why is it released monthly?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for your question. Really, it carries gravity because if you look at this notice, it's really something that it is a tool that farmers should always seek to use because the information that it carries, it's actually something that can inform you as a farmer on what to plant. Mm-hmm. Because if you look at those crops that are there on that notice, you'll be able to understand that those crops were selected to feature in the special control product scheme, a scheme that was designed to assist farmers to be able to access the market or the shelf. So what it happens is that every month we monitor local production and we call the farmers. Sometimes we even go to their field and check and verify to see which product we are able to bring on the table in a sufficient volume or quantity. So when we realize that that particular product now is not enough, that is when we are now talking about opening the border. And if it's enough and we see that what the farmers are likely to bring on the table is enough, then we close the border so that we encourage the traders to source everything from our local farmers. So really this tool is just to create market access and also to guide the farmer to know which product they need to produce. Because if you look at the product that, if you see that this product always, it's open for importation, either on Prolata or 100%, it's a clear indication to you as a farmer that that product is not sufficiently produced and you need to come in and contribute or do your part. But when you see that the product is always closed, it shows you that the majority of farmers are doing that same product and you need to avoid it at all costs, because otherwise you create a situation of market influx or market flooding, the same way we have the situation of onion as we speak. As we speak now, we have a lot of farmers that are doing or that have planted onions, because last year we had a very good price for onion this time.
Okay.
So what the farmer did is that everybody, each and everybody, majority, they planted onions, and now they are in, all of them. So this actually has a possibility to push down the price. In any case, already the price is being pushed down because it was at $11 per kg. Now it's going down to $6 per kg. And you'll be so shocked that next week might even go to $5 or $4.30 because everybody wants to sell. And these people now, everybody is now pushing the price down. And really it's not good for a farmer because you'll end up even selling beyond local production costs, and it's not healthy for the business. And hence, we want them to start talking, start having conversation of which products should we plant and who should come in and what time, and also strictly observe the closed border period that we always take here. And I want to also encourage those, the Eagle FM viewers, they are very aware that at least every time we are taking this notice with you, and if they can just now normalize listening to this program, I think especially on the 20th of each month, it will really be helpful for them and it will really save their business a lot of trouble.
Maybe I have a question, just a follow-up question actually, on one point that you just highlighted, us having now more onion or produced more onions than maybe... In that case, how about maybe we export more onion then?
It's a very good question because normally historically we import our onions to Angola. And I think Angola now, they are also not sleeping. They started producing their onions. And I think they are also in this period. This is the time also they are harvesting their onions.
Okay.
And that's why now it's very tricky because for you to import... for you to export a certain product to a country, that country must have the capacity
okay.
for that particular product. But if they have also a product in abundance, then why they should import?
Definitely.
Because in any case, it comes with the logistic challenges and so forth. And even when the product arrived there, it will be now not fresh as compared to when they are sourcing it locally. And that's what is bringing now the problem. Mm. Currently now, the country where we're supposed to export, they are also having their onions. And we have our onions, plenty of it. And that's why now you see that farmers, they need to start talking. They need to start coordinating. They must avoid working in silos because it's really creating a problem.
Mm.
And you find that next year, since now they suffer the loss, everybody will stop planting. And this period, again, we will have scarcity of onions.
Definitely.
And the price will be up.
Mm.
So I think this type of thing, it boils down to production planning.
Mm.
If we can start having conversation, working in association, we had some meetings where we are talking about to say, okay, Emily, if you are coming in this month or this week, Liseli can come in the other month and
Lois a different
can
club.
Come in. It's different. I mean, planning our production such that it's in a staggered production manner.
Mm.
I think that is the only way we are able to solve the problem and keep having the same mentality that farming is lucrative and it will remain very rewarding and lucrative. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just that the problem is now planning from our side. Okay, maybe just for me to, if you can allow me to run quickly.
Yes, please. Just do that apart from onion. Yes.
Yeah, I will unpack starting from those products that are open, but it doesn't look really impressive.
Mm.
I must acknowledge because a lot of products, they are open for importation. And this is actually triggered by weather extreme.
Mm.
We experienced cold weather. I think it was too cold such that some areas, they experienced frost.
Mm.
And they really lost their crops. And you see that most of the crops that are fruiting vegetables, such as the tomatoes and the English cucumbers, the peppers, they are not doing so well. Because remember, these are heat worshippers crops. So when now it's too cold beyond, for example, maybe below 4% or minus two or minus three, because it also depends on the how extreme or the extent of frost. You see that most of those crops that are summer crops, they don't really thrive so well.
Okay.
And they can actually even, we can even lose them as a farmer. So if you look at our notice now, the product that are open, there are seven, open 100%.
Okay.
We have beetroot, we have carrot, we have gem squash, potato washed, watermelon, sweet melon, and sweet corn.
Mm.
And the one that are open on prolata, meaning that it's only a specific percentage that will come in. Normally, you look at now the percentages ranging between 20%, 30%, and 50%. So English cucumber is open on 30%, bell pepper 30 as well, the green pepper is 30, jam tomato is 30, cocktail tomatoes is 20%, round tomato is 50%. Round tomato, if you look at the round tomato, is actually a tomato, it's a diamond of farmers. This is a particular product that we produce in a very good quantity.
Okay.
But because of frost, a lot of farmers, they are hard hit by frost, and hence, really now the production is lower, such that 50%, half of it is coming from outside. And lettuce is 30%, so it's only 70% that we are bringing on the table. And mind you that if anything, I mean, anything can happen. If the weather did not change, maybe July things get worse.
Mm-hmm.
You find that we have to adjust again, such that we have to allow some product to come in. Because our ultimate goal is to enhance food security in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And food security means that you must be able to have all different types of food.
Okay.
That you wish to eat that particular day. So we do not want a situation where a consumer is going on the shelf and there is some product that are missing. So that's why it's our responsibility to see to it that what we are not producing, traders, they can get it from outside.
Mm.
And that's what we are doing. So the one that are closed, there are only six. We have onion, we have pumpkin, we have sweet potato, we have cabbage, we have butternut, and we have spinach. And currently we are investigating on spinach. It might be open next week because a lot of farmers, they are actually complaining that they lost their spinach because of frost.
Okay.
So that is actually how it looks.
Mm.
And again, once again, I just want to encourage farmers to really pay attention to this notice and make sure that whatever that is always on Prolata, things like potatoes, things like gem squash, things like carrot, we must, and sweet corn, we must really make a plan to see how we can scale up our production and be able to satisfy our domestic demand, because the government is really doing its part. Namibia Agronomic Board is doing its part to create market access, in fact, 100% market access for you farmers. But we need your part to produce, because traders are saying that we don't have a problem to source locally.
Okay.
Because when I'm sourcing outside, it's like the good will be now, I mean, it will be older 4 days, because it takes me 4 days to get my product from wherever I'm taking it. But if I'm taking it locally, it's like it will be 4 days fresher on the shelf. And that's a good thing. So we need to produce and pay attention to quality and the small details. And I think all will be good. So let us produce what we eat and eat what we produce. Very important. One thing that I want to indicate here is just that winter, it's actually just, I mean, it brings a lot of trouble, just like the way us human beings also complains about winter.
Yeah.
And obviously, there's always a mitigation strategy that you can employ as a farmer. The same way when you are faced with winter, or you are feeling cold, you prepare tea to heat your body. You also cover your body with blankets or whatsoever, just to protect your body from too much cold and or to from catching cold. And so many things that we do. Some of them, they believe, people, they believe you need to bath for you not to experience a lot of cold. It's the same way. So some farmers, they basically believe that watering your crop prior to frost event, it also helps the plant to survive, because some water will now freeze on top of the leaves and it will prevent the leaf tissue or the tissue of the plant to get damaged by frost. So that's number one. Number two, some of the farmers also, they cover. The way we use the blankets to cover our body, they also cover their orchard, especially for fruit.
Okay.
They have a cloth cover, or is a netting they cover, and obviously the damage will not be so severe as compared to somebody who did not cover his or her plants. And then the other ones, they also create heat in their orchards. You find some of the farmers, they put their cow dugs there, they light the fire so that they create heat. So it's also helping. I've observed one farmer in Stamford last year, who planted watermelon in winter and really went through winter. But the watermelon is one of the three crops that he, it's a summer crop, you can't grow it in winter, but he managed. He was lighting the fire using cow dung. So it can help. It helps that particular farmer. It can help you as well. So, and then another alternative is a synthetic method, which is there's a chemical that is almost in the form of wax. You apply to your crop, and then it's like it will be now be like to wax your leaves, the leaves of the plant. And when the frost now is so severe, at least your crop will not be damaged. So there's so many methods that you can apply. Some of them are traditional methods. And I think let's just try to protect our plants. The same way we protect ourselves, let us protect our plants, because that is our business. If we leave the crops to die, then obviously we'll also lose in terms of our income.
Thank you very much, Mayor Emily. Any of your last words that you also want to add?
Yes, thank you so much. I think my last comment today, I just want to register our gratitude to Eagle FM Radio to say you guys, you are doing a great job, because the way you are disseminating information on agriculture and always allowing us or affording us the platform to unpack a close and open border notice, I think in a way, you are also contributing to food security. And we just want to say that we value your service.
Okay.
See what you are doing, and may God bless your hands of the work, or the work of your hands. Thank you so much.
We appreciate you, Mayor Emily.
It's all right.
You say shelves are stocked with a variety of fresh produce, dairy products, pantry staples, and more. All at prices that won't break the bank. 4 kilos, real good frozen mixed chicken portions, just $189.99 Namibian dollars. 700 milliliter Wellington's tomato sauce, $26.99 Namibian dollars. 900 grams Harvest Time frozen mixed veggies, $34.99 Namibian dollars. And 500 grams Rama 70% fat spread, only $27.99 Namibian dollars. You save, we all save at You Save.
Omotiha with the Kiroakaguna I Matina.
Right, the time is 2 minutes in the half 7 o'clock, and this is early morning scoop. Just to continue unpacking the open and close border notice for July 2025 from the Namibian Economic Board, as you heard from Emily. Of course, she indicated the purpose for this notice, stating that mostly just to protect local industries and, of course, ensuring food safety and, of course, just to support local producers, of course. And right now also we are joined by a horticulturalist and a student studying a sustainable crop production and, of course, technologies, Martin Shuden, just to unpack further on this particular notice. A very good morning to you, Mr. Shuden, and welcome to the Early Morning Scoop.
Good morning, Louis. I hope you are well, and good morning to all the listeners.
Doing so well. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you too for putting me on air.
Just to start off with this July notice, I mean, looking at the previous one, there were about nine crops there that were closed for importation, and of course, indicating a very great success when it comes to our producer. I mean, they did well in terms of production. However, now for July, there's only six crops which are closed now for importation, indicating that there should be issues. Now, we just want to hear from you. Can you maybe just tell us about the maybe any methods farmers that can maybe use just to prevent the losses during their harvest?
Yeah, no, thank you very much again. Mm-hmm. Firstly, I'll just love to make a disclaimer probably, because maybe I might be sharing some information from Namibia Agronomic Board.
Mm-hmm.
That they've published, or it's public knowledge.
Mm.
So just to say that I don't work for them, but I'm a certified horticulturalist.
Okay.
And still continuing my field of study in sustainable crop production and technologies,
mm-hmm,
at the University of Namibia. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I have experience when it comes to producing horticultural products.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, just to address your question, probably just safe to start off from giving some few statistics quickly,
mm-hmm,
because the horticultural industry in Namibia is rapidly growing, or is growing slowly but surely, with increasing domestic production. Because if we look at, let's say, even in 2023 to 2024, the annual exports, grew to almost about 2 billion. And domestic demand was about almost a billion Namibian dollars. And local production, as we know, according to NAB, covers about 47% in terms of national demands. And the main crops, mm-hmm, mostly is onions, like you stated, that we are going to cover right now, tomatoes, potatoes, cabbages, butternut, sweet potatoes, and peppers. And mostly the challenge that we face is mostly climate challenges, frost damages, limited agro-processing and post-harvest losses.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but NAB has put up really measures such as the MSP, which is the market share promotion, and also the border closure notice that we are going to touch on right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So like you have rightly stated, nine crops were under closure for June,
mm-hmm,
2025, which is butternut, cabbages, green pepper, onion, pumpkin, sweet potato, round tomato, lettuce, and spinach. And looking at our current month, looking at July, we only have about six crops now,
mm-hmm,
that are closed, which, mm-hmm, is butternut, cabbage, onion, pumpkin, sweet potato, spinach. And this is largely due to frost impact, which has caused this reduction in crop closure. That is one of the main factors. And just to talk about what is frost, according to Namibia. As you know, Namibia is a region, we have different climatic zones.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly when you talk of frost, we are referring to when temperatures go below 0 degrees Celsius. And we know that is very, very cold. If temperatures go below 0 degrees Celsius. And mostly that is the period that we are in, mostly May to August. It's mostly winter or cold season. And many crops do not do well during these temperatures or during this season of winter, where specific crops that really do well. So talking about what you have asked, mostly what this leads to, it kills crops that are frost sensitive. Mm. Most crops do die because of these conditions. Or it also leads to slow growth or reduces the yields of these crops. Mm. Mostly, like we know, if we say tomato is one crop that doesn't do well in this season. So, yeah, how to maybe prevent this mostly is to have a mechanism such
maybe,
as
green. Yeah, the method maybe that the farmers can also look at.
Methods that farmers can look at mostly using greenhouses or shade nets. Because looking at greenhouses, these are just, special structures that have been made to grow crops all year round because you can control the climatic conditions or the temperatures or the cooling. They have coolers that control the temperatures within the structure, and mostly you can grow any type of crop. Yeah, but many farmers can't really afford these greenhouses because they are expensive structures to set up, but that's one of the solutions. Mm-hmm. So another cheaper solution is using mulches to cover the soil of your crop. So a mulch is just most basically using organic or inorganic material such as grasses or plastic, you know, that you can lay down on the basis of your crop or in your field or on your ridges. And this can use to create a bit of heat for your crops. And another thing to look at is just watering before frost nights.
Okay.
So that at least your crops are able the next morning, you know, to have sufficient water throughout the day. And also another important thing is just adjusting planting schedules. Because one challenge is many farmers don't know when to water their crops or when not to water their crops. And also different crops at different stages of different water requirements. For example, a crop when it has just emerged from the soil, we don't expect to give it the same water as when the crop is just starting to flower. So it's also just to have that understanding and plant have a planting schedule properly. And also another thing is just the use of wind breaks, that is planting, let's say, crops or trees along the edges of your field. This protects having cold temperatures coming into your field. And also just to practice crop diversification. This is planting different crops in your field. So also farmers need to understand in terms of crop diversification, maybe understand different planting systems such as crop rotation and intercropping. This can also help in terms of that regard.
To farmers, I understand maybe they should be or they might be crops that are maybe dedicated to certain season. Could be maybe their winter crops, their summer crops. Maybe just talk us through maybe that, what is that farmers need to plant during the winter season?
Yeah, no, thank you very much for that question.
Mm-hmm.
I think as farmers, we need to understand, especially when it comes to Namibia, that we have two main growing seasons. You know, or we have two main, you know, weather seasons. You know, we have what we call summer and winter. Like right now we are in we are in June, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we are in June and, we are in winter right now. So as we know, if we are talking about winter or summer, if we are talking of summer, right? Summer season, we are referring to seasons from October to March. Right. And we are talking of winter season. We are talking about seasons from May to August, right? Including June, July, you know, that we are in and approaching right now. So summer crops mostly is crops like your tomatoes, your pumpkins, your watermelons, your sweet corn, or your maize, your butternuts. Those are your summer crops. And your winter crops mostly are your cabbages, your spinach, your carrots, your beetroot, your lettuce, your broccoli. So what does this mean then? This means then crops that are mostly summer crops, they do well between October and March.
Okay.
Right? You can plant those crops because they are very frost sensitive. You know, frost is a temperature that is below 0 degrees Celsius, like we explained.
Mm.
Your crops such as your cabbages, your spinach, those are your winter crops, meaning they can do well in winter.
Yeah, maybe it is my next question is that, like, there's an issue where May Emily rather indicated today that there is farmers that have produced more onions than the local market demand. Maybe what do you think has caused this, and could it maybe be a lack of planning within the producers or farmers? And maybe what do you believe is also the best way to address this situation?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just before I talk about onion, I'll just love to share a quick story quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I remember at our farm, or one farm that I was, busy working at, we planted cabbages.
Mm-hmm.
Just like I explained earlier, cabbage is a winter crop, but then we took a chance to plant our cabbage in summer. That was from around, I think, November, December, January, took through until that season. So we were harvesting January, we're harvesting in February,
mm-hmm.
right? But cabbage mostly it's a winter crop,
okay.
right? But then we took a chance because we wanted to enter the market earlier while other farmers are still planning on producing mm-hmm. their cabbages, right? So this is just to say that we need to understand the market first as farmers, you know, that what is in the market right now, what is not in the market,
mm.
and what are the prices going for the produce that we are doing. So the issue that we find ourselves here, I could say, is, you know, farmers overproduced onions, you know, exceeding local market demand, you know. So this can be caused by, you know, lack of coordinated planning across the whole sector
mm-hmm.
of horticulture. And also just in terms of poor access to market data, because one thing we know when it comes to farming, we really lack data or information. And I think that is why this session or this interview is very important, so that we can just send more information out there to farmers.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I think another thing is misunderstanding of MSP rules, market share promotion rules of NAB. Because as farmers, at times we believe that because of NAB putting up measures that as farmers, you know, when they close borders, we can just produce as much as we need. You know, we misunderstand what it really means, and which leads us to having challenges of having a lot of products on our hand later. And another cause is just when farmers all over Namibia, you know, plant and harvest the same crop at the same time. And this is it's a problem because it causes market oversaturation, where everyone is just having the same crop at once. And then it also leads to storage pressure. You know, and as we know, storage is one of the challenges that we have as horticultural farmers. We know we have AMTA, that is an initiative by the government to assist local farmers with marketing and storage, but it's so far away from people. So many farmers end up having that challenge. So it leads to us having lost opportunities then.
Yeah.
Lost opportunities in terms of farmers and, you know, which leads Namibia to importing also during low period despite having local capacity. So maybe some solutions is just to encourage, us as farmers, you know, that we need to have different planting times, you know, because we have to look at our different climatic zones in Namibia
mm-hmm.
and understand, because like areas that are frost prone in Namibia, you know, mostly, let's say when we look at the maize triangle in Namibia, we have areas such as Oshikoto, we have areas such as Ochozonjupa and Omaike. Those are areas that really do well, but they are prone to frost. We also need to look at how we can, you know, have our different planning schedule in terms of planting our crops mm-hmm. in areas that are not really frost, that are free frost. And then we also need to encourage more extension officers, that can go out there in the regions, in rural areas to educate people mm-hmm. on different markets, on the seasons, and also to follow NAB guide for planting calendars.
Mm.
And also to encourage and the government to support the cold chain and storage facilities so that they can extend the shelf life and market reach for our farmers. So and also to encourage more promote agro processing, such as onion drying and other methods that we can use just to prolong our onions. Like in our case right now, if farmers are sitting with onions at their hand, many of them don't know what to do with them, but if we can, dry them, do pickling or sort, I think those are some of the things that we can do. And also to encourage exports to SADC, different SADC areas. I think maybe the government needs to help in that regard. And there's also what we call the African Continental Free Trade, which is an agreement that was signed by the 55 countries of the AU. That promote the free flow of goods and services across the continent to boost trading position. I think it's really a document that needs to come to life, and it can help with some of these challenges, because as Namibia, we are part of this Africa, and we need to take advantage of different opportunities that exist out there. In conclusion, maybe just to emphasize that farmers need to understand the best planting times for our different crops in Namibia.
All right.
More specifically the onion challenge that we have. Ideal planting time, you can say, is February to early May. Right. And, and onions, they take about 3 to 4 months to mature. And another thing is also just we need to understand that there are different varieties that do well, because you can have onion as a product, but then there are also different varieties of onions. That can do well in different seasons.
Oh, yeah.
So, let's seek information out there, on the different pages such as NAB, online, on Facebook. Like, mostly let's get our local information more to our farmers. I think it's really going to help us to be able to understand our different operation and as to how we can produce efficiently and as effectively as farmers.
All right. Thank you so much, Mr. Shudeni, for having you today.
No, thank you very much, Louis. It's an honor that you put me on air today just to share the information that I had.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all right. On our next item, President Netumbo Nandi-Ndaitwah has announced that the Namibia Investment Promotion and Development Board will now operate under the Ministry of National Relations and Trade. Now, this decision is part of the government restructuring aimed at better aligning trade, investment, and of course, diplomatic efforts. Now, this announcement was now made during the Invest in Namibia session that was held in Angola on the 24th June 2020. However, we all know that the Namibia Investment Board, Promotion and Development Board was directly under the presidency, whereas now the president indicated that it will now collaborate closely with the ministry just to attract foreign direct investment, enhance economic diplomacy, and of course support the development of trade and investment policies. Now, just to help us understand, or rather just to analyze this for us, is Ms. Dinelago Mutota, who is a governance analyst, just to help us understand and unpack this shift. A very good morning to you, May Mutota, and welcome to the Early Morning Scoop.
Good morning, Loise. Thank you for having me.
We are doing good. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, speak to us about this. Now that the Namibia Investment Promotion and Development Board is now back in the Ministry of Relations, maybe in your view, what changes will it bring, or rather improve investment landscape in the country?
It's very important to note that the integration mm-hmm. of the Namibia Investment Promotion and Development Board mm-hmm. being put back into the Ministry of International Relations and trade offers an opportunity to strengthen coordination between trade diplomacy and as well as investment promotion. And it's also important to note that this move could allow for more streamlined engagement with international investors through Namibia's embassies and high commissions. It may also improve policy coercion by aligning trade strategies with investment facilitation efforts. However, it's also important to consider possible challenges that come with such a shift. One risk is that NIPDB may lose some of its operational independence and flexibility, especially if it becomes bound by broader bureaucratic procedures within the ministry. However, the effectiveness of this transition will mostly depend on how well the institutional roles are defined and how operational independence is balanced with ministerial oversight, which will ensure continuity in NIPDB's investor engagement strategies while also enhancing inter-agency collaboration will be key to sustaining investor confidence.
Now, having the ministry also strengthening the board itself, previously that when they were on their own, were they not maybe performing well, or maybe perhaps it's also an issue of governance? Like, what is your view on this?
My view is that this is not necessarily a shift due to poor performance.
Okay.
For me, it seems as if this shift appears to be primarily an issue of governance and institutional alignment rather than poor performance. In the world of public management, when institutions operate with overlapping or unclear mandates, or also when coordination across sectors become difficult, restructuring is often used as a tool to improve functionality. In this case, I would say NIPDB falls under this functionality. And also, moving the NIPDB under a dedicated ministry may help address some of the governance challenges that come with operating independently, such as limited alignment with trade policies, fragmented communication channels, and also difficulties in interagency collaboration. Hence, it's important to look at it that the goal is likely to embed investment promotion within a more structured policy and also accountability framework, which can improve coordination, streamline decision making, and enhance the institution's ability to respond to national economic priorities in a more integrated manner.
Mm-hmm.
One thing is to also just redefine the mandate. Why was NIPDB initiated in the first place? Realign the mandate and also look at the board in itself. They must also look at the challenges that they face as an institution on its own and look at how now that it's put back into the Ministry of International Relations and Trade, how can they move forward to make sure it's going to be efficient and effective as it's supposed to be, so that the people in our country, Namibian citizens, are okay with it being put back into the Ministry of International Relations and Trade. Because one thing I'm also realizing is that it's losing its public trust, where citizens are now questioning whether we are actually supposed to have NIPD as an institution if it cannot run independently on its own.
During the occasion, President Netumbo Ndaitwah mentioned that they have an idea of working together with the private sector just to better serve the nation, right? Because she mentioned that, I mean, the aim is to serve the nation. However, now my question is here, or rather my concern is also here, that considering that now the private sector often operate independently, I mean, they don't really depend on anyone, but they depend on their own. In your perspective, how can they collaborate effectively?
Collaboration between the public
and the private sectors, yes,
is both possible and necessary, especially in driving national development, because the government as an institution or the government as a whole cannot make sure that national development occurs. Hence, the private sector is needed to assist the government. While the private sector does operate independently, its success is often tied to the strength of public infrastructure, policy stability, and access to markets, which are all areas influenced by the government. Hence, for effective collaboration, the key lies in creating predictable policy environments and structured engagement platforms. These platforms include regular policy dialogues, sector-specific advisory councils and mechanisms for joint planning and feedback. For example, countries like South Africa have used public-private growth coalitions to align national development priorities with business interests. Hence, by working together through clearly defined partnerships where expectations, roles and responsibilities between the private sector and public sector are aligned, the two sectors can complement each other.
Okay.
Hence, the government can provide the enabling environment for the private sector to take place, and the private sector will bring innovation, capital and job creation, which is needed for culture of mutual trust and ongoing engagement.
All right. Yeah, maybe just in your view, what additional maybe alternatives should the government also explore or look at just to enhance services and, of course, grow the economy?
Thank you very much for the question. To enhance services and stimulate economic growth or to grow the economy, the government can explore several complementary strategies. Hence, the first one that we can look into is the government investing in digital transformation. Hence, we all know that the country, the world is digitalizing. Hence, the government can make public services more accessible, transparent, and efficient. And also, digital platforms for licensing, permits, and service delivery can reduce delay and improve accountability. And another one that we can look into is the government can support small and medium enterprises, especially in rural areas, through access to finance, capacity building. Hence, we have noticed that most of the time the SMEs that are being supported by the government are those ones in urban areas, and then we are leaving back small businesses that are operating in rural areas. Hence, if we do this, we can help with capacity building, and local procurement policies can unlock inclusive economic growth. And the last one that we can also look into is deepening regional trade integration under the African Continental Free Trade, which will provide an opportunity also for Namibia's to diversify Namibia's economy and step into broader markets, which will not only enable Namibia's economy to grow as a whole, but the economy of Africa to grow as a whole. The other one that we can look into is the decentralization, which is basically strengthening the decentralization of service delivery, particularly in health, education, and infrastructure. Hence, we cannot be talking about growing the economy or enhancing service delivery if the people within our country don't have access to the basic health services, which is health, education, and infrastructure. If we can do this, this can bring government closer to communities and ensure that growth benefits are more equitably distributed, not only for businesses at large, but also for individuals or citizens of Namibia as a whole. That I have is for more Namibians to actively participate in our economy, not necessarily from a business perspective, but also just to give their views, recommendations on how we can improve NIPDB as a whole, as an institution at large.
Thank you so much, Ms. Mutata, for having you.
Thank you guys for having me.
All right.
The time is 30 minutes in the off 7 o'clock, and this was the Early Morning Scoop updates. Thank you so much for joining us or staying with us ever since 6 a.m. We really appreciate you for this. And, of course, do not go away. Please stay tuned for the next program that is Unpacking of the Day with Mike Oshoveri, just to take you through the unpacking of the day. Thank you so much, and please enjoy your rest of the day and, of course, the weekend. And from me, Lois Ashiri, it's a good day.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything IMBA has to offer at an unbeatable price. IMBA, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Omotiha utekirwa kaguna iimatina omjo. Shikao shafasa na nana longeshifa ya ishiwike moshiwana. Iye moyao ota ingongotisa mwene. Anageshifa ya Namibia, ompito ombwa na wa oronjika. Seitha nina omayakudo ni randitoma yoe, yongeshifa yoe okupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uu kakombanga nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimepo yomo programa letu. Moambo, dengira selma, konarahi tatuimu. Datu ndatu, heari hamano tano, oniyaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
So not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. Mm. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past. Mm. And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Great.